This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So glad you're with us, everybody. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And we know that we have a lot of our audience that was really into a reincarnation of spring football this year. We have been very open about our passion for the Alliance, the AAF. In fact, we're still simulating the end of the season. Tomorrow, your final episode of Alliance Primetime when it comes to the regular season to see how things wrapped up in the 2019 inaugural year, the only year of the AAF. And so we here on the show are a bit emotionally scarred. We have been broken up with. The AAF obviously is no longer. We don't know if we can jump back on the horse just yet. We've looked out the window and it's rainy, it's cloudy. We're worried about having our heart scarred again. But there has been some overtures. There's been a new girl in the bar that's been flirting with us a little bit, and we want to at least give it some attention because we don't get flirted with often. That would be the XFL, which just denounced its newest head coach in the New York area. That would be former Giants offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride, who was part of the staff that won two Super Bowls with the New York Giants, and he's now going to be the head coach of the New York franchise in the XFL. The CEO of the XFL joins us in studio, Oliver Luck, and he has done everything in the sports world and now has taken over the reins of this brand new league, and he joins us here in studio. Oliver, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing great, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not sure which metaphor to pick up on. I can show you a little bit of skin, maybe. I can ask you to trust us. I can say that the sun is rising, and there's blue sky on the horizon. I'm not sure which one to pick up on, but let me tell you, we want to embrace everybody that loves spring football because we love spring football.
The timing was tough for us because we invested emotionally in the season.
Absolutely. I make light of it a little bit. But
we didn't even get through the regular season.
That's right. I was a fan. I was enjoying watching the games.
You were?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought the people that said the brand of football, the quality of football was not good were disingenuous because I thought the brand of football actually was really good.
I thought the football was good. Listen, Bill Polian is a very smart, successful football guy. I'm not sure there's anybody on the planet that knows more football than Bill does. And I thought the level of play was pretty good. I will say I thought the quarterback play could have been a little bit better. And I suppose was a result of paying everybody the same, right? In our sort of hierarchy, quarterbacks are, you know, more important than everybody else, so we want to pay a little bit more for those guys. But I thought overall, you're absolutely right. I thought it was a good quality play, and I thought the games were fun. A lot of close, competitive games.
So in the XFL, unlike the AAF, there will be structure. There will be tiered salaries for different positions?
Correct, with quarterbacks on top. That's the natural order of things.
And what is, no question. That's how the animal kingdom works. How much will be the top tier of what XFL quarterbacks can make?
So our top tier will be guys making $250,000, $300,000. We can afford to pay a quarterback that amount of money based on our salary structures. And then as we go down, we get down to levels much like the AAF was.
The biggest problem, obviously, with the Alliance was not executing the games and the gameplay itself and having good players, because a bunch of players ended up already on NFL practice squads and rosters in the offseason and in rosters in the XFL. It was finances. And so how do you convince a new audience that you won't have the same financial issues that the Alliance did?
Well, I think there's really two things. One is time and one is money. And, of course, they're both, you know, interrelated. So ultimately, as you know, as everybody knows, Vince McMahon is the force behind the XFL. And Vince has made a very serious capital commitment because you need money in any startup, right? And particularly in sports, particularly in football, which is so logistically complex and at the end of the day, relatively expensive to launch. So Vince is committed for certainly more than 1 year, and he's got budgets that have been put together for multiple years of XFL football. And that's the reason I signed up. I think that's the reason many of our head coaches signed up, guys like Bob Stoops or Mark Trestman or Kevin Gilbride that we'll announce just shortly. So those guys are all good quality people. They love football, but they also, you know, want to make sure that it's a secure venture. And I think based on what I've seen of Vince over the last 7-8 months when I joined the company, it's all very serious, and he's ready to go. So that money has given us the time to plan. And I think those are two things that are indispensable to any sort of a startup. And I think at the end of the day, the AAF kind of lurched a little bit too quickly into the business side of things. And of course, as you pointed out, you need both the football and the business side to work.
Oliver Luck joins us from the XFL here in studio. Did the Alliance try to get ahead of you guys and launch a year early?
You know, I'm not sure I can say why they launched when they did, but I think they did launch too early and, in a sense, didn't have the time to prepare the business side. You've got to get broadcast partnerships, sponsors. You've got to get solid ticketing folks. You got to hire a bunch of people. I mean, it's a big, you know, enterprise. So I'm not sure why they launched when they did, but at the end of the day, I think they didn't give themselves enough time to get the business side set up.
One of the stories out there was that their technology, specifically their app technology, was really futuristic and really valuable. Did you guys view it that way?
I watched a number of games on my smartphone, and you know, I'm not a gambler, so I can't really say too much about that. And of course, I live in a state where there is no online sports wagering, so it would sort of you know, a moot point in a sense. You know, can't really speak to how good their app is, quite honestly, because, you know, as I watched it, you know, I watched the game, I really didn't pay attention to a lot of the sort of gizmos and other functionalities of the app. So I'm not sure that, you know, whether their app really was as valuable as folks may have thought it would be.
I mean, everybody in, it seemed, in the Alliance thought it was going to be lasting at least 3 years. Their player contracts were 3-year contracts. And when Tom Dundon pulled the plug on it, everybody said, this is impossible. Is there any fear for you that you've seen the projections and yet there could be always the unknown that you guys don't get through the first season?
I highly doubt it. I never want to rule anything out, but I highly doubt it. I mean, Vince has gone through this before. He's a successful business person. I mean,
and they've only made one season.
That's right. No, to be fair, you're right. They made one season, and then both the network at the time, NBC and WWE, you know, shut it down. But he's gone through this before. He's built a remarkable, successful company, WWE, with, you know, 500 events a year around the country. I think he knows a lot more today than he did back in 2001 with the old XFL. I think, quite honestly, our football staff is much more seasoned and experienced and understands this. I've gone through a football startup with NFL Europe for 10 years and sort of understand how that works. So it's possible, I suppose, but I think it's highly unlikely that we won't see multiple years of the XFL.
My biggest concern with the XFL is that you guys decided to launch in cities that had NFL teams, and the Alliance decided the opposite. They went into places like San Antonio and Orlando and places that are big enough to support football but not big enough to have NFL teams. What was the decision-making into getting into the big NFL cities?
Sure. So the rationale is there are 40 million diehard passionate football fans, probably guys like you and I. And those folks have a void in their lives come Super Bowl because there's no more football for an extended period of time. And we decided that in the larger markets, there's more of those passionate football fans. And I assume here in New York, we'll have season ticket holders from the Jets and the Giants who support the XFL franchise in New York, and season ticket holders for some of the colleges or folks that go to high school, but people that just love football. We think there's more of them in markets like New York and Houston and Dallas than there is in Memphis and Salt Lake City. So I think that's a significant difference in sort of the strategy that we had versus what the Alliance did.
You guys say you were not happy to see the Alliance end. Is that right?
That's correct. No dancing on the grave, no schadenfreude. It's a cautionary tale, quite honestly. I was a fan as well. I knew a bunch of the players and a number of the coaches in the league and was rooting for certain guys. And I was, you know, chastened when the announcement came that they shut down.
So I respect you and I trust you, but I don't trust this. How would you guys have fleshed out another league full of rosters if they didn't fold? Because didn't they all have contracts that were exclusive that you could not have plucked AAF players?
They had contracts where there was a restriction on playing in any other spring league. Now, that's a legal clause that we believe would not have been upheld by a state court, right? Because the average professional football career is relatively short, less than 4 years, and restricting somebody's ability to play in another league, we believe was a, you know, violation of the freedom to contract. So we never got to that point, right? Because the league folded, and now all these players are available for us, which, by the way, is a good thing for us. The player pool and the coaches pool. There's some pretty good coaches in that league. I got calls from Mike Singletary and Mike Riley and many other assistant coaches in that league. So all of those players and coaches opened up, which I think is a good thing for us. But we weren't happy about seeing that league not make it.
But because of that, didn't there have to be some happiness and satisfaction? I mean, the fact is you're going to have to get, you couldn't break through that legal barrier, you're going to have to get an entire other league's worth of roster, you know.
That's true, but think about the numbers. Folks, I think, kind of forget. So an NFL team goes to camp, let's say early August, with 90 guys on their roster, and then they cut down to 53 come September 1st, September 2nd. That's a pretty good size cut. One fell swoop, right? Nowadays, the Turk is very busy that particular day, going around and cutting these guys. You know, there are literally hundreds of players who are available at that point in early September. Some of those guys cycle back through, of course, because of injury and because they're the next offensive lineman that the team's going to sign when somebody gets hurt. But there's literally 400 or 500 players that are available every year. And some of those guys are the same guys, right, who go through that cycle constantly. But there's a lot of talented football players out there. We believe, even with the AAF, had they survived, that there are enough quality players to make our league work.
Would the cautionary tale about the Alliance that they did not have their funding correct and their business structure, or was it that they gave too much control to a guy like Tom Dundon that could pull the plug before anybody else wanted to?
Great question. I'm not sure I know the specifics about Dundon's obligations and his the rights that he held when he came in and pledged his financial commitment. But clearly, I think the funding wasn't sorted out. We can just say that. And secondly, I think they didn't have enough time. They just didn't have enough time to establish the franchises in the local markets, to sell tickets, to get local sponsorships. I think I read somewhere where they had literally one league sponsor. And I think anybody in the sports business realizes that you need to have a much more robust, right, league sponsorship program, as well as at the team level. So I think at the end of the day, it was time and money. And those two things are indispensable for success.
Oliver Luck, CEO of the XFL, joins us here on the show. So because we were so emotionally connected with the Alliance, we obviously were searching for reasons that it ended. And one of the reasons that we have bandied about here is that perhaps Vince McMahon had a deal with Tom Dundon and said, you know what, end this, pull the plug, it's over. What do you think?
I highly doubt that. I can't speak for Vince, of course, but I'd be surprised if there was any sort of backdoor relationship that the two have. Dundon's a successful business person, I think made a bunch of money in Texas with low-cost automobile loans, et cetera. Vince operates in a much different space with WWE, publicly traded company, so I really can't confirm or deny there was any contact between those two gentlemen.
What about the type of football you want to play? Because the Alliance had a few wrinkles, but it stayed pretty true to what we know about football. Well, the XFL, the first iteration, was kind of a wacky version of football. What about this version?
So this version, we want to, number one, avoid gimmicks. And I think there were some gimmicks, seriously, back in 2001. I'd be the first to acknowledge that. We want to have an up-tempo, fast-paced game. We want to have 75, 80 plays per team, a little bit higher than what the NFL has. We want it all done in 3 hours, because we think that one of the complaints we've heard from folks is that these games last a little bit too long.
And the pace of the Alliance was the best thing they had going for them.
They had good pace. They had good pace. We're looking at a 30-second clock. We're looking at a running clock during the first quarter and up until the 2 minutes left in each of the halves. And we've tested all this stuff. We've got a different kickoff. We've got a different overtime system that we really like. We're working with our broadcast partners to sort of figure out a lot of the specifics about that. So we want an up-tempo, fast-paced, fun, exciting game with a couple of twists. Vince asked me to reimagine the game. It was a great opportunity to do that as a football fan. Who wouldn't like to do that, right? But at the same time, I said to myself, you know, professional football, the NFL level, college football, major colleges, the five big conferences, it's at a pretty good level right now. I think football is being played as well as it's ever been played. I'm amazed by the talented athletes and the great catches and the great tackles and the great moves and the great throws that you see every Sunday and every Saturday. So we didn't have to do much to really improve the game, but we think we've got about a dozen innovations that we think will help the game and we think fans will find very interesting and compelling.
How are the broadcast partners going to break down? When will games be played? What television networks?
Yeah, so we will have two major broadcast partners. We got four games every weekend, of course, eight-team league, and we'll have two of those games basically every weekend on terrestrial over-the-air coverage. Then we'll have the addition, the remaining two on a fully distributed cable network or networks. So brands that everybody recognizes, we'll announce those relatively soon. We think that's great exposure for us. And really, we're putting visibility at a much higher level than we are, for example, tech and streaming. Right? Those are all important. Those are coming, right? The young people love all that stuff. But for us, we believe that visibility on major networks is really crucial to make sure that we can kind of get over the hump and really get established. So we're excited about that. There'll be Saturday, Sunday games. Right? We may have, towards the end of the season, a couple of Thursday evening games. We're going to sort of experiment with that. But we want to be traditional Saturday, Sunday, which is the time that diehard, passionate football fans like you and I want to watch football.
So I think that's interesting because I would agree the visibility on a national scale is so important. One of the problems, though, with the Alliance seemingly in a lot of local markets was they didn't do enough internal promotion within those markets to get people out to games. That attendance started to sag really outside of San Antonio and Orlando. How much stress, influence, emphasis will you put on the in-game experience for fans to go out there in those markets?
A ton of emphasis on the in-game experience. And if you've been to a WWE event, I think you realize how important that experience is. I spent 10 years in Europe with NFL Europe, and the game day experience was crucial because you want people to come in and not just enjoy the game, the play on the field, but have an enjoyable time, right? Buy a hot dog, a Coke, reasonable prices, listen to some good music, some nice entertainment. You want a good, well-rounded sort of day. So that's going to be very, very important for us. And that's a lot of work, right? That's another thing where you simply need time to kind of prepare your schedule for a game day, how it operates, what it looks like, who the guests are, how it works. Those are all issues that you just can't turn around from one day to the next.
The XFL will debut the weekend after the Super Bowl next year?
Correct, February 8th, Saturday.
February 8th, 2020, the XFL comes, and they've announced five of the eight head coaches, right?
That's correct.
So this upcoming week will be St. Louis, you said?
Well, during St. Louis on Thursday, and then more than likely before the end of the month at L.A., our coach out in Los Angeles, and then we've got one left, which is in Houston.
So keep an eye out for all of those hires and those announcements and the XFL working towards spring of 2020 for their debut. Oliver Luck at the head of this joining us here on the show. You know, obviously we still have a very raw wound, but as it heals, perhaps we'll come by and hang out. We'll have a drink with you guys.
We will put, salve in the wound? No salt, just salve. Okay. So we appreciate that. We won't let you down.
Thank you. We don't need that again. Oliver Luck joining us here on the show. Thanks so much to him and the XFL for dropping on by. When we come back, your best audio of the day, including Zion announcing on his Instagram that he is entering the NBA draft. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hear the 12 DAs of Christmas as they happen.
Cyber pool.
No, it's not cyber at all. We're doing it directly to your face.
But in front of computers.
So if the computers are an audience of the teasing, it's now cyberbullying.
Yeah. Doing it around technology. So stupid.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week. How about Ben Simmons last night? He begins the game aggressively against Brooklyn. Goes for 18 12 assists and 10 rebounds as Philadelphia drops 145 in a game to win 145-123 over the Brooklyn Nets. That splits the series at one game apiece as they go back to Brooklyn for a pair. Simmons, who was, the entire team was booed by the Philadelphia faithful, and then Simmons criticized the home fans for booing, got a standing ovation when he extended Philadelphia's lead to 20 in the third quarter. The player of the week brought to you by Grainger. Grainger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it. Grainger.com. I don't want to get stuck in a spring football rabbit hole here because we're in the middle of the NBA postseason, the Stanley Cup playoffs. Russell Wilson just became the highest paid player in football last night. You have all types of crazy stories that have popped up. Golden State chokes away a 31-point lead last night. So I don't want to spend too much time on spring football because you know us. We could do this all day long. But I will say that Oliver Luck's appearance here on the show just now as lead in the XFL has allayed some of our fears. I think it's given us some confidence on the XFL, maybe even sold us a little bit. And then other parts of it have been a little worrisome and has created a little bit of a firestorm behind the scenes here. Notably, when I asked him about essentially Mraz's working theory that he created that now people have started to pick up on, that Vince McMahon and Tom Dundon could have some type of deal to have ended the alliance. And when I asked him about this, Oliver Luck, I believe the quote was, "I highly doubt it," but at the very end said, "I can neither confirm nor deny," which wasn't as strong, as forceful a denial as you wanted.
No, first of all, if you know you're coming on this show and we're the ones pumping out that theory, you got to completely dismiss it if it's not true. Completely. You guys are ridiculous, DA. Why would that ever happen? Slam your hand on the table and something. Don't say I can neither confirm nor deny it after saying you highly doubt it. Deny it. Deny it. If you can't confirm it and you're Vince's right-hand man, well, damn it, I smell some snake.
Well, maybe he can't know that because Vince wouldn't allow that information out. Maybe Vince is working incognito on this.
I would expect Vince to work incognito, and I appreciate Oliver Luck's honesty, but as a league, when this is the hot rumor going on out there and it started on this show and you come on this show, if you're not prepared to completely deny that, I'm sorry. That tells me, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire, right? When there's weed, you pull the car over.
Here is when there's what?
When there's weed, you pull the car over.
I've never heard of that metaphor. Here is my other concern. When I asked him about the exclusivity of the contracts, and he said, yes, the AAF said you're not allowed to play in another spring football league under contract, but that we would challenge that in court. So that's a big if. I mean, they could have challenged it in court. They expected to win. But if Garrett Gilbert could be paid more by the XFL under his contract to the Orlando Apollos, he could not have just gone to the XFL for a raise. He would be breaking a contract, and I suppose
Breaking bad.
Anyway, they could have challenged it, I suppose, in court, but that's a big if. So you know they wanted the alliance ultimately to go away, because then that created a whole new pool of players that they didn't have to challenge in court for.
Yeah, and also that would lead me to another thing. How is the alliance going to afford lawyers to handle any of this in court after the season? That would be another road to go down. We were doomed from the start.
Yeah, doomed and duped. Let's get to your sound check, your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Joel Embiid threw an elbow into Jared Allen's face last night, Sixers Nets.
I wasn't surprised. I saw the replay, and obviously it wasn't intentional. I got him pretty good, and I'm sorry about it. But okay. I'm sorry about it. It wasn't intentional, but it's just me trying to be aggressive. I'm not usually humble. That's why he's laughing. But, I was just trying to be aggressive.
Oh, my God. Embiid is the best. I got him pretty good. He's the best. 23 points, 10 rebounds in last night's win. And Joel Embiid, happy-go-lucky and loving life and playing well, and the Sixers are a force. If he's not, he's distracted to the sideline, and he's looking at Amir Johnson's text thread with his daughter, and he's hoisting up, chucking up three-pointers. Well, then the Sixers are very beatable. Zion on Instagram declares for the draft.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you for making this season a dream for me. I want to thank God, Coach K, the assistant coaches, my family, my teammates, and all the friends I've made at Duke. Thank you for making this year the best year of my life. I don't think I can put it into words on how special this year was. The brotherhood is incredible. Just being out there in Cameron, everything about this team was special, and learning from Coach K was special. He taught me so much about the game of basketball in one year that, you know, it made me sit back and go, wow, like, I didn't know anything.
I think Zion is obviously an incredible physical freak of nature, but I think one thing that I really like about Zion is I believe he's really humble. He doesn't believe he knows everything. He seems to really have enjoyed the NCAA experience, and I think he's going to be a really good teammate and a really good player to coach. And that's so unique in a player that has this much attention this early in his career. And finally, Doc Rivers, head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, was in the Bay Area for these first two against the Golden State Warriors. And before last night's game, he dropped a bunch of money on the ground, and somebody in San Francisco or Oakland, I don't know where, said, hey, bud, you dropped your cash.
Shout out to the San Francisco person who, at the corner today, I was walking down the street. It's a true story. I reached in my pocket to grab my phone, unbeknownst to me. Dropped about $2,000 on the floor, on the street, kept walking, didn't know it. The guy tapped me on the back and said, you know, that's your money. I don't know a lot of places that would happen, but it happened today. So whoever that was, you could have had free tickets if you hadn't ran away. So anyway, thanks, guys.
Only free tickets? I got something else if I just gave you $2,000 back, Doc.
Doc Rivers drops $2,000 in front of me. I got news for you. I'm running up the freaking mountains and the San Francisco streets to Ghirardelli, and I'm out of there. I'm buying $100 worth of sundaes and putting the rest of the $1,900 in my pocket.
I've heard Mraz's famous quote before. Find us, keep us, lose us, weep us.
Find us, keep us, lose us, weep us. There's no doubt.
Hey, yo.
But imagine as you're walking behind Doc, the envelope drops, you see the money, and that's the time the huge bird comes down and takes you away.
That's a good point, Pogish. Nonetheless, though, I will say, you think I'm stupid for that take? How stupid is somebody for giving back somebody $2,000? You see $2,000 full, you take it, you put it in your pocket. You're
an idiot.
Well,
so for hooves.
No. I think I actually would have given Doc Rivers the money back, but I would have sat there and waited until he offered something in return. I mean, it's Doc Rivers, so you think you're going to get something. Maybe a luxury suite, maybe you get hooked up by the Clippers, maybe you get two tickets to the game. I mean, the bad news is there, being a good Samaritan was great. The bad news is there, you can't run away before you get something back in return, because you deserve something back in return. You're the idiot.
But we've walked some of those streets, DA, where we wanted to run away in
That's
San
true.
Francisco.
That is
so
true.
Who knew what was going on there?
If he found it in the Tenderloin District, I don't blame him for giving it back to Doc and then just running for his life.
Though I don't think Doc was staying where we stayed at Airbnb.
When we come back here on the show, Drew Tranquil is going to join us, Notre Dame linebacker, as he enters the NFL draft. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Me and this man together are magical. Write a check, cut the damn check, boop, boop, and we can entertain America. If you want it, write the damn check. Write the damn check.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Trash Tuesday to you, boys and girls. We'll get to your trashes coming up here on the show. As always, you can listen to full episodes of The Da by simply going to iTunes or anywhere else that podcasts are available, searching DA and CBS. You'll find us there. Also available on the web at CBSSportsRadio.com. Just click on the DA Show tab. The Game Plan for Success, sponsored by Napa. Taking a look at a team and their plan for success, the Raptors. Want to avoid going down 2-0 against the Orlando Magic, the crazy seven-seeded Magic upsetting Toronto in Toronto in game number one. The key for the Raptors, guarding the perimeter. Orlando shot nearly 50% from beyond the arc, And defensively, they were very good as well. The Magic, dangerous underdog for the Raptors. The Magic had the third best record of the NBA following January the 31st. So February and March going into April, the third best record of the NBA. They got hot late, the Magic did. Napa Auto Parts has the expertise in parts you need to help you keep your car on the road no matter how many miles it has. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Trash is coming in. Jimmy tweets, I'm trashing the Masters for piping in artificial bird sound to the tournament. Every hole, every shot, do the happiest birds on earth all reside in Augusta, Georgia? Hashtag orgasmic birds. I'll have what she's having.
Warm, sizzling garbage.
It's a good point. Are the birds always chirping at Augusta? With thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people there? Like, that's how it sounds in the backyard of my parents' house when just my dad's out there reading a book, smoking a cigar. Is that what birds are going to sound like when there's 200,000 people roaring for Tiger Woods' bunker shot?
Yeah, that is bizarre now that you say that. Now, is that like a laugh track underneath a sitcom in front of a live studio audience? That is strange.
Is it possible the Masters has speakers set up around the course piping in bird sounds?
It's distinctly possible.
Like it's the Bronx Zoo? Is that possible? I never thought about this. Adriana tweets, I want to trash my kids today who can't seem to remember to shower while I'm out of town. They better get their butts in gear before our house starts smelling like Minnesota. P.S. I think it's the humidity that makes sweaty cab seats smell like hockey pads, not obesity.
Let's face it. That's straight trash.
Oh, you guys are funny. Joining us here on the show, a linebacker entering the NFL draft after spending his college time at Notre Dame, Drew Tranquil, a two-time Notre Dame captain, joining us here on the show, the heart and soul of that Notre Dame defense this season. Drew, good morning. How we doing?
I'm doing really well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. My pleasure. I appreciate you dropping on by, and I know from hearing your other interviews and reading quotes from you that you're really thoughtful about this entire process. So what has been your big takeaway from going into the draft after the end of the season and where we stand now? What has this experience been like for you?
I don't know. It's kind of like a, honestly, it's like a big feedback loop. I think you get back what you put in. And certainly, you know, there's been a lot of people in Notre Dame that have certainly helped me get to the position I am now. But I look at this pre-draft process and, you know, I surrounded myself with great people there in Exos and in San Diego, and they gave me the tools, and I kind of just attacked it. And, you know, we had a good showing at the Senior Bowl and then at the Combine and certainly at Pro Day. And so it's kind of been one of those things where I've really seen, you know, you get back what you put in.
You grew up in Indiana in Fort Wayne. Originally, you were going to go to Purdue. You ended up switching to Notre Dame. Those are the big schools right around you that I'm sure you ended up growing up watching and what have you. So what flipped you from being a Boilermaker to being a member of the Irish?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee for half my life, and we moved to Fort Wayne for my dad's job. Both my parents actually went to Auburn, so I was a huge Auburn fan growing up.
Huh.
Loved watching Auburn football, sat on the couch all day and literally watched SEC football on SEC Network all day growing up. And so coming to Fort Wayne in Indiana, everybody here was Notre Dame fan. Like everybody, they thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I was like not too keen of the idea actually. And so I hit the recruiting trail, and you know, I'm the oldest of five. I have 400 siblings, so family is really, really important to me. And I knew I wanted to be close to them to play ball. And so I obviously went on some visits to some schools around here and kind of came down to Purdue and Notre Dame. Notre Dame didn't offer me until late. That's why I was between Purdue and Notre Dame. I had committed to Purdue, and I was like, oh, man, like Notre Dame comes on late. I'm like, well, I don't want to decommit. That's kind of not who I am, and that looks bad. And, you know, I did some praying about it and ultimately made the switch. But, yeah, that's kind of the short version, I guess.
Huh. Notre Dame linebacker Drew Tranquil joins us here on the show. So how do you feel now about Notre Dame fans?
I love them, man. I can't say anything. Can't say anything bad about them.
You had one of the freakiest injuries ever a couple of seasons ago. You broke up a pass, and you jumped up and celebrated with a teammate, and you hit him side by side with that classic celebration. You came down, and you blew out your ACL. You were hopping around holding your ACL in your knee. I'm sure when you look back at that, you're like, oh, man, that was just crazy. At the time, yeah. What was that like to experience?
Well, I mean, I had just come off the other ACL, so I was like, oh, my gosh, like, did this really just happen? Just totally taken aback, frustrated, angry. Every emotion you could possibly think of was rolling through my head as I kind of rolled down the ground. Looking back, I guess I'm more frustrated that my teammate couldn't jump high enough, so that I had to jump higher than him. And, just giving Joe Schmidt a hard time there. But, that was tough.
When you're recovering from that injury, are you beating yourself up every day going, oh, my God, how could I be so stupid and injure this on a celebration?
Well, I'll tell you, the weekend after, I guess that weekend after that game was like, it was just those thoughts. Like, it was just nightmarish. Like, this was so preventable. What was I thinking? I can't believe I did that. Like, what if I would have just not chosen to jump up? Like, and just basically replaying that thought in my head for close to probably a week. And I realized that wasn't helping me get any better. So yeah. I tried to just flip the switch and, you know, attack the rehab the way I did the first one. And you know, certainly I feel like that was kind of pivotal in regards to me being able to accelerate that recovering process.
Notre Dame linebacker Drew Tranquil joins us ahead of the NFL draft. So I was checking out your NFL.com profile page. They got strengths and weaknesses. And one of the strengths is beach body build with a strong base and low center of gravity. Do you have any idea what a beach body build is?
Whoever wrote that, I guess you'll have to go ask them what that looks like. Maybe they spent some time on Venice Beach or something. I don't know.
But it's a strength, so I guess it's a good thing.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I put in the strength.
You know, I think one of the things that people really love about you is your fiery leadership, your ability to connect with others, the fact that you became kind of a heart and soul guy for that Notre Dame defense. Have scouts or executives talked to you about that, or are they mainly just focused on the tangibles, the football skill set that you bring to the table?
Well, when I talk to teams, you know, that's kind of the first thing, you know, they mention. They love that aspect of me being a two-time captain and how we took a team that was 4-8 and one of the worst in Notre Dame history and, you know, made it into something special this year and had a chance to compete for a championship. They love that, and they kind of, you know, address that first, and then they want to, you know, get to some areas where they might have questions. You know, I think that's what the whole really scouting process is about, is like, okay, like, let's poke at this guy as much as we can. Let's figure out, you know, where are his holes? Like, you know, we can identify a guy's strengths pretty well via tape, via talking to other people. But quite often the harder thing to do is in a lot of guys' cases to find out, you know, where are they susceptible? Where are some weak areas? So, it certainly shifts to, okay, tell us about the knees. Tell us about, you know, this. Tell us about your transition to linebacker. How do you like that? You know, those sorts of things.
Linebackers now in the NFL have to be able to cover all types of receivers and running backs coming out of the backfield because of where passing games are. Now, you seem to be able to play in both worlds, be a linebacker, but also drop back into safety coverage as well and defensive back coverage. How important is that going to be for your game at the NFL level? How much have they talked to you about that potentially?
Well, I mean, if you look, I think there's a statistic I read last year, 70% of the plays in the NFL were passing plays. I think if you look at that statistic alone, you see where the game's evolving, and you see the need for not only your back end, but your second end guys to be able to run, cover, and play in space. And quite honestly, I think that's what makes me one of the more complete players in this draft, is my ability to play multiple positions and having experience at, you know, different levels in the defense. You know, I certainly think on Sundays, you know, executives are looking to put guys on the field who can certainly run sideline to sideline, and cover these guys like Ertz and all these other playmakers that you know, stretch the field vertically.
Drew Tranquil joins us, two-time Notre Dame Irish captain. He was the heart and soul of this year's team that ended up in the college football playoff, and beach body build. So he's got that going for him as well. Hey, Drew, this is awesome, man. This was a great conversation. I appreciate it so much, and hopefully we can catch up again after you get drafted.
Yeah, I'd love that. That'd be good. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. Drew Tranquil joining us from Notre Dame. Excellent stuff. Excellent, excellent, excellent stuff. And that was a fun conversation. What a day it's been around here on the DA Show, huh? This is why you tune in, because we just have kind of this big, oversized hat of magic tricks, and we just keep pulling things out of the hat. And so at one point, it's Oliver Luck talking about spring football. At other points, it's Drew Tranquil talking about blowing out his ACL while celebrating. At other points, it's Charles Davis telling us five different quarterbacks could be selected in the first round of the NFL draft. We've got Trash Tuesdays. We've got Mraz freaking out right now about the XFL potentially killing the Alliance. He cannot let that go. So we've got a lot of action here, plus the evil Dundons last night won. They have now crawled to within a 2-1 series against the Washington Capitals. America 2, Dundon 1. So there's just so many magic tricks in this big bag, in this big hat that we just keep pulling out. And it continues next because Russell Wilson just got paid. Did the Seahawks overpay to keep their quarterback? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.